I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. U.S. law enforcement officials say a United States Army veteran who drove a truck into a crowd of New Year's Day revelers had pledged allegiance to ISIS but acted alone in the attack. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Reyes spoke at a press conference Thursday.
We do not assess at this point that anyone else involved in this attack is involved in this attack except for Shamsuddin Jabbar.
Shamsuddin Jabbar was shot dead at the scene after firing at police. The 42-year-old Texan was a U.S. Army veteran who once served in Afghanistan. He posted videos on Facebook on the morning of the attack, in which he said he supported Islamic State, according to the FBI. At least 14 people were killed in the attack. The FBI also said there was no link between the attack and the incident in Las Vegas on the same day, in which a Tesla Cybertruck exploded in flames outside the Trump International Hotel.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. Police on Thursday said a highly decorated elite U.S. soldier planned to cause more damage when his rented Tesla Cybertruck exploded outside the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Officials believe the man in the truck was Matthew Livelsberger,
a Green Beret operations sergeant,
on approved leave from a special forces assignment in Germany.
The individual had sustained a gunshot wound to the head prior to the detonation.
Clark County Sheriff Kevin McMahill says they believe Livelsberger shot himself in the head and the explosion did not cause the intended damage. Seven people suffered minor injuries. Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. The 119th U.S. Congress will come into session Friday. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
A new U.S. Congress set to start Friday. But Speaker of the House Mike Johnson's leadership position is in jeopardy after his deal last month with Democrats to keep the government funded and open. Meanwhile, House Democrats have expressed concern about the influence of billionaire Elon Musk after he stalled the government funding bill by posting his concerns about it on social media. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Indian authorities said on Thursday they had completed moving toxic waste from the site of the 1984 Bhopal gas leak disaster, which killed more than 5,000 people. Reuters correspondent Arthi Thayaprin reports.
On December 3, 1984, a methyl isocyanate gas leaked from a pesticide factory owned by American firm Union Carbide, poisoning more than 500,000 people. 12 leak-free containers carrying about 370 tons of toxic waste reached a disposal facility on Thursday. Swatantra Kumar Singh, the director of Bhopal Gas Tragedy Relief and Rehabilitation Department, told Reuters. The Madhya Pradesh state government said in a statement that a trial run was done in 2015 to dispose of 11 tons of waste and that it will take 3 to 9 months to incinerate the remaining material. Singh said the trial run conducted by the Federal Pollution Control Agency found emission standards to be in accordance with prescribed national standards and that the process is environmentally safe. But activist Rachna Dingra said the solid waste after incineration would be buried in a landfill and will result in environmental concerns.
Reuters correspondent Arthi Thayaprin. Researchers in Britain have unearthed nearly 200 dinosaur tracks that date back 166 million years. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The discovery, announced on Thursday by the universities of Oxford and Birmingham, was made last summer when a worker digging up clay in a quarry in Oxfordshire noticed unusual bumps. That finding led to a week-long excavation in June, which unearthed five extensive trackways that form part of a dinosaur highway. Four sets of tracks were made by herbivores called sauropods, which were most likely Cetiosaurus. The Cetiosaurus comes from the Middle Jurassic period in what is now Britain and probably France. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, VOANews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Today is Friday, January 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Authorities say the man who plowed a truck into New Year's revelers in New Orleans was a lone wolf.
This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act.
A new report on African political trends finds that civil society space is shrinking in several countries.
If I look at the 17 countries under election in 2024, we have witnessed deterioration in these participatory measures in Algeria, in Botswana, in Burkina Faso, in Chad.
And a strange object weighing over 500 kilograms crashes into a Kenyan village.
This was an act of terrorism.
Investigators say the American Army veteran who rammed a truck into a crowd of New Year's Day revelers in New Orleans had pledged allegiance to the Islamic State militant group, but acted alone. He killed at least 14 people. Christopher Rea is the assistant deputy director of the FBI's counterterrorism division.
This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act.
Reyes says the assailant also posted 5 videos to his Facebook page shortly before that attack.
This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act. In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers, end quote. Additionally, he stated he had joined ISIS before this summer.
The suspect, identified as 42-year-old Shamsa Din Jabbar from the U.S. southern state of Texas, was shot dead at the scene after firing at police. On Thursday, security was tight ahead of the Sugar Bowl, a major American football game. It was to have been played on Wednesday, but was postponed until Thursday after the attack on the New Orleans famed Bourbon Street. Clara Brokert, research fellow at the Soufan Center, which focuses on foreign interference and terrorism, tells VOA that 2024 was the year for the resurgence of ISIS.
We saw an enormous uptick in ISIS-inspired plots globally, and we also just saw an enormous uptick of successful attacks globally. But even in the United States context, we saw numerous thwarted plots related to the Islamic State. Sometimes it was just ISIS-inspired, meaning that the perpetrator, or the potential attacker, the potential perpetrator, was inspired by the Islamic State, was consuming propaganda from the Islamic State, and was going to perpetrate an attack in support of the Islamic State. But we have also seen attacks in the foil plots in the United States this year in 2024. Where the U.S.-based individual was in touch with ISIS recruiters online. So it doesn't come as a surprise that there was a successful plot in New Orleans.
That was Clara Brokert. She's a research fellow at the Soufan Center, and she was speaking with VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Whitaker-Squara on Thursday. Law enforcement officials on Thursday said 37-year-old U.S. Army soldier Michael Livelsberger from the western state of Colorado was likely the person inside a Tesla Cybertruck that exploded outside the Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. The driver died in the blast, and 7 people nearby suffered minor injuries. The FBI says it has so far found no connection between the New Orleans attack and the Cybertruck explosion on the same day. The FBI also said it was not yet clear whether the Las Vegas blast was an act of terrorism. A metallic object weighing approximately 500 kilograms and measuring about 2.5 meters in diameter crashed into Kenya's Mukuku village this week. Reuters correspondent Ciara Lee has more.
A large metallic object crashed into Kenya's Mukuku village on Tuesday. Officials believe it is space junk from a rocket's launch vehicle. The item weighs over 1,000 pounds and measures about 8 feet in diameter. The Kenya Space Agency, or KSA, assessed the debris in the crash site in Makueni County. Here's KSA officer Major Alois Weir.
It is a part of a space object, which is in form of a ring, a metallic ring, possibly from a rocket separation stage.
Officers retrieved fragments from the site for further analysis and to investigate the origin of the fallen object.
We are to assess the impact to the area, identify whose space object it is, so that we can use the existing legal mechanisms under international law, as far as the Outer Space Treaty is concerned, to look and to find a way to first get the person and bring him to the responsibility of his space object.
The KSA said the debris does not pose an immediate threat to safety. There were no casualties and no significant damage was reported. There's growing concern around increased global space activities and the rise of man-made objects in the Earth's orbit. That's led experts and governments to highlight the potential risks associated with space junk, including incidents like this one when debris falls back to Earth.
That is Ciara Lee of Reuters reporting. In its latest report released late last month, the Mo Ibrahim Foundation reviewed trends in politics, including elections, for its 2024 African Governance Index. 12 African countries held elections during the year, with the last one in Ghana on December 7th. Burkina Faso, Mali, South Sudan, and Guinea-Bissau postponed their polls. Somaliland, a breakaway region of Somalia, also held an election. Natalie Delapalm, chief executive officer of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, tells VOA's Peter Clody that civil society space has been shrinking in several African nations.
Participatory and democratic measures have fallen. And this, of course, is concerning. If I look at the 17 countries under election in 2024, we have witnessed deterioration in these participatory measures in Algeria, in Botswana, in Burkina Faso, in Chad, in Ghana, in Mali, Mauritius, South Sudan, and Tunisia. And in all these countries, deterioration has been worsening, or the rate of deterioration has been worsening over the second part of the decade. You have witnessed deterioration between 2013 and 2014 and 2023 in Comoros, in Mozambique, in Namibia, in Rwanda, and in Senegal. The only country where the situation of overall governance has improved are Mauritania and, to a lesser extent, South Africa and Guinea-Bissau. In these two countries, even if the level of participation is better in 2023 than it was in 2014, it has begun to decline since 2019.
Talk to me about media freedom and rights, because in some countries, a lot of civil society groups and media organizations have complained about crackdown. Talk to me about media freedom and rights in the year 2024.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Actually, we've looked more closely at the 2 years leading to election in 2024, which was what happened in between 2021 and 2023. And what we see is that media freedom has been restricted between 2021 and 2023 in 15 out of the 17 countries. So this is, of course, a matter for concern. The most dramatic fall is to be seen in Burkina Faso, followed by Tunisia, and also, to a lesser extent, Senegal. All these three countries have registered declines in media freedom that are above 10 points.
Now, let's look at positive democratic shift, since the continent appears to be embracing democracy in spite of some slip-ups in other countries, briefly.
This is indeed an interesting trend, I think, and a hopeful trend. What I would say is probably we need to look at it a little bit more closely. We need to reflect on democracy, what it means, but also what is the best system. I'm saying that because for the time being, the indicators we are looking at are executive elections, most of the time, executive elections held, well, quite some years apart. Democracy is also a system that probably works even better now at local level, because it's dealing also about daily life. So we need to consider democracy at local level. We need to see whether in between elections every 5 or 7 years apart, to what extent it would be useful to hold more regular consultations, because this is also democracy. And this is definitely something that the young people, and you know that on the African continent, 65% of the population is under 25, are looking for.
That is Natalie Delapalme. She is CEO of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, and she was speaking with my colleague, Peter Clody. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam, filling in for James Buddy in Washington. Today is Friday, January 3rd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Coming up on our program, at least 5 people were killed in ethnic clashes in South Sudan. Authorities say 5 people were killed and an unknown number were injured during intercommunal fighting in South Sudan's Lake State this week. Jal Nhongik is a lawmaker representing Quebec County in Lake State. He tells VOA's John Tanza that more needs to be done to stop the violence in South Sudan.
6 people were killed, 5 from those who were attacking those in Chebet, and then one was killed also on the side of Chebet, and then there were some youth who were wounded. The cause of the conflict was just the revenge. It has nothing to do even, they left even cows. It was the revenge for the previous killings which happened between the two sections, because there have been many killings going on in this area, because the specific place that the conflict took place is called Gulmar, which is formerly known as Kubur William, the place where William Daniel was killed in 1968.
Honorable Joel, it takes 2 to fight. It appears like you are hell-bent on blaming Rumbek North, but it takes 2 to fight.
It takes 2 to fight, but when somebody has come to your house, it is hard now to blame somebody who is attacking the house. That is why we are saying, not because we are taking side, but we are telling the truth. Who is attacking, who is the one to blame? So that is just a natural justice. You cannot blame somebody who is attacked. You blame those who are attacking. Even if they are right or wrong, the fact that they have attacked someone, and when thereafter the fight took place and people were killed in the land of those people, those people who were attacked are presumed to be right until we go to court. So that one is out of question, because we cannot blame those who were attacked.
When this attack was taking place, where were the police, the army, the national security, and others who are supposed to protect lives?
No, the problem is that in South Sudan, as a whole, leave alone Lagos State, the law enforcement agencies are very weak, extremely weak, because once, they are not paid. 2, they are not armed properly, as you have been hearing this issue of sanction and armed embargo on the security apparatuses in South Sudan. The government is not able to import arms and is not able to arm even the police. So the police are left without anything to defend. Civilians are able to...
But you are repeating a narrative that is false. South Sudan has lots of weapons. In fact, every village you go to in South Sudan, people are armed. How can you say the police are not armed and the military are not armed?
And that is the fact now which I'm telling you. I have talked of this system or these law enforcement agencies being weak. What does it mean? It means that these are weak compared to civilians. The civilians are more armed, have a lot of arms, more than even the army personnel or those security forces, those security agencies. They are not armed. The implication is that because they are not armed properly, because of government is not able to arm them properly, the government is blocked, and the civilian get arms through these borders, border of Sudan and border of where there are conflict. We have had, even last time when there was...
Before conflict erupted in Sudan, communities in South Sudan are armed to their teeth. The narrative that the conflict in Sudan is... spreading arms into South Sudan is also another false narrative, because before the conflict in Sudan, communities in South Sudan are armed to their teeth.
Where should you think that the guns are coming from? The disarmament has been recycled. The same army are going to disarm and the guns are coming back. Where do you think who is in control of arms? By presumption, it is the government. The government is the authorized person to hold arms with its agencies. So when the guns are coming back every time, even if there is disarmament, you point at those who are supposed to control guns, which are the army themselves plus the police. So this, you cannot even question anybody because they are just staying, and they are not staying willingly, deliberately, because they are being faced by numerous challenges.
That is Joal Mhangek. He is a lawmaker representing Quebec County in Lake State of South Sudan. He was speaking to my colleague John Tanza. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump made immigration a key focus of his 2024 presidential campaign. His incoming administration is planning stricter enforcement. VOA's immigration correspondent Aline Barros explains what these policies might mean.
In his presidential campaign, Donald Trump promised stricter border measures, including greater detention and deportation of undocumented immigrants.
We're going to end up with the largest deportation in American history. We have no choice. Have no choice, right? Have no choice. We have no choice because that's not sustainable by any country.
Possible Trump plans include expanded detention facilities and a return to the Remain in Mexico policy, requiring migrants to stay in Mexico during U.S. immigration proceedings. Trump's pick for border czar, Tom Holman, says tougher enforcement will focus on improving public safety and national security.
The heels of the biggest illegal immigration crisis we've ever seen in this nation, there has to be a massive deportation operation.
Some immigration experts say mass deportations weaken public safety by discouraging immigrants from reporting crimes. David Beer is the director of immigration studies at the Cato Institute.
Immigrants are more likely than the average U.S.-born person to report crimes to the police. But studies have repeatedly shown that when indiscriminate enforcement increases in an area, that reduces that already high rate of crime reporting or higher rate of crime reporting among immigrants.
If migrants do not have criminal records, Democratic and Republican administrations have generally released them while they await immigration hearings. That may end with the incoming administration considering mandatory detention. Immigration attorney David Leopold.
If I were a lawful permanent resident, a green card holder, I'd be sure to have my green card on my person now.
Trump officials argue that these measures will deter criminals, but Beer found that was not what happened last time.
Mass deportation is going to deprioritize serious offenders. When the Trump administration came in last time, they rescinded all the requirements to focus on serious offenders, felons first, and as a result, not surprisingly, ICE doubled the number of arrests of non-criminals.
Meanwhile, he says the number of criminals found attempting to cross the border tripled. Trump says he will act on immigration on day one of his presidency, January 20th. Aline Barros, VOA News, Washington.
Natural gas prices in Europe have risen after Ukraine ended the flow of Russian gas across its territory into the European Union. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Wholesale gas prices in Europe rose on Thursday to their highest level since October 2023. It follows Ukraine's decision to end the transit of Russian gas across its territory to Europe on January 1st. Moscow is set to lose over $5 billion a year, while Ukraine will lose around $800 million in transit fees. But the impact on Europe will be limited, says energy analyst Thomas O'Donnell.
It was all prepared for. It's basically all priced in. Now, of course, there's winners and losers to a certain point. Certain countries are more dependent on this than others. Slovakia, Hungary, for example, Austria. They will have plenty of gas. It's just that they'll have to pay more, like everybody else has all along.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said last month he would no longer give Russia the opportunity to earn additional billions while its forces continued to wage a war of aggression on Ukraine's soil. Slovakian Prime Minister Robert Fico is close to Russian President Vladimir Putin. The two met in Moscow last month. Fico opposes Western support for Kyiv. Speaking Wednesday after Ukraine cut the Russian gas supply, he accused the EU of sacrificing the interests of smaller members for what he called meaningless geopolitical goals.
It will have drastic impact on all of us in the European Union, but not on the Russian Federation.
In reality, the European Union has drastically cut its dependence.
That is Henry Wichwell reporting for us. And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson Omali in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you too, Carol. We begin the sports with a look at Africa sports calendar for 2025. All eyes will be on Morocco as the kingdom stages the Women's Africa Cup of Nations WAFCON from the 5th to the 26th of July. Its male equivalent, AFCON, will hold from the 21st of December 2025 to the 18th of January 2026. And the Under-17 Women's World Cup will also hold in the North African country. In February, the African Nations Championship, the competition for domestic-based players, is scheduled for the 1st to the 28th of February and will test how far along co-host Kenya, Tanzania and Uganda are in their preparations for the 2027 AFCON. In athletics, the major track and field meet for the year will be in Japan when Tokyo hosts the World Athletics Championships from the 13th to the 21st of September. Botswana's Olympic 200 meters champion Lesile Thibogo faces stiff competition in his quest to add another senior global gold to his burgeoning media collection. Kenya's Faith Kipyegon could potentially go for a third successive world title over 1,500 meters. History will also be made on the African continent when Rwanda hosts cycling's Road World Championships, which visits Africa for the first time in what will be its 98th edition. Kigali is a venue for the week-long series of races from the 21st to the 28th of September. South Africa are the continent's only representatives at the 2025 Rugby World Cup in England that will hold from the 22nd of August to the 27th of September, but the Springbok women are looking for a first win at the tournament since 2014. The country will also appear at the World Cricket World Cup in September, looking to better their semi-final exits from the two most recent editions of the 50-over tournament. Guinea will make their debut at the Men's World Handball Championships from the 14th of January to the 2nd of February among a five-strong African contingent, while the women's equivalent will begin in November. Egypt will stage a World Para Powerlifting Championships from the 11th to the 18th of October, while Tokyo will be the venue for the Deaflympics the following month from the 11th to the 18th of November. And now to basketball, where the battle for the four slots in the 2025 Uganda National Basketball League begins this weekend as the Division 1 playoffs tips off at the YMCA in Wandegeya and KIU in Kasanga. And now to the CAF Champions League. With intense battles across all four groups this weekend, teams are gearing up for decisive fixtures that could shape their destiny in the competition match day four hostilities. The standout clashes include CR Belouizdad's home test against record winners Al-Hakli in Group C. And that does it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Carol.
Thank you, Samson. And that is it for this Friday, January 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, wishing you a terrific weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.